Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for the Friday gathering. This week I'm joined by Fianna Fáil Senator, former Galway East TD Anne Rabbitt, Independent TD for Roscommon Galway Michael Fitzmaurice, Political Editor with the Journal.ie Christina Finn, and Chief Executive of Friends of the Earth Oisín Coughlan. And you're all welcome to the programme. So this week we're all talking about the Taoiseach's visit to the Oval Office. Like, it did go well. Donald Trump talked a lot, Micheál Martin not so much, but it was fairly clear that the US President is fond of Ireland. He said he'd no desire to cause problems for us. Then within a couple of hours, he announces 200% tariffs on alcohol products from the EU, which could have really significant implications for businesses here in Ireland. So Anne Rabbitt, I might come to you first on this. I mean, the size of relief, Micheál got out the gap. But to what end? Like, did it really matter when Donald Trump announces this 200% tariff with more to come in the aftermath?
It did matter, Claire, to be honest with you, because I do think that it was the first real visit into the Oval Office since we had the Zelensky incident. And I thought Micheál handled himself, and there was a sigh of relief. He did really, really well. And it shows that he's a really good diplomat in situations like that. But did it matter? Because, yeah, he went and he put the 200% tariffs, or mentioned the 200% tariffs the next day. But I think that all comes back to, again, dialogue, diplomacy and engagement. And it shows that talking does matter. As opposed to the quick sound bites that Trump operates out of.
But look, we are going to get caught in the crossfire here. I mean, you heard what he's been saying about the EU. So as much as he might like Ireland, and he's very fond of us because of Doombeg and all the rest, it makes no odds. He's gunning for the EU.
Yeah, no, that was very, very clear in all of his contributions throughout the length of the time that himself and Micheál were there in the Oval Office. I would be hopeful that with the engagement and the dialogue, that first and foremost, it's important that we're open and we're a free trade and everything else like that. But it's important also to be part of the EU to have that counter piece. But I think also we could also be looking for exemptions.
Mm-hmm. Oisin, you want to
go
in there?
Well, what struck me about it, looking at it live, was how disciplined Trump was. Not the chaos that I kind of expected from him. He was very on message, his own message. He knew his numbers. He seemed well briefed. He even knew that Micheál Martin's father was a boxer. And I heard your earlier conversation with The Economist. I think what's clear now is he really means what he's saying around tariffs. And so he might do the plum-horsing as well as Micheál does. But he's going to come and he's going to continue with policies that look like they're going to cause potentially a recession in the US and potentially problems
around the world.
Do you know
what? It's interesting, though, because if you listen to what he says on tariffs on the alcohol, on the drink, right? He wants a reversal of an EU tax on American whiskey being sold here. And I just wonder, is he open to piecemeal negotiation on each and every tariff, Michael Fitzmaurice, do you think, that comes in? That this might not just be a gunning for the EU, as I said, but that there is wiggle room here.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that, you know, people talked about Micheál Martin the other day. He was you're on a hiding to nothing if you're going in with someone. You have to try and work with them and be diplomatic. And I think he done that sound, because compared with Zelensky, who got his ass handed back to him in a plate, you could say, you know, Micheál Martin came out of it unscathed for Ireland, because this wasn't...
Well, some people said, Michael, that he didn't say enough.
But this is the thing. Sometimes you better shut up, because at times... But Micheál Martin, not alone was it Micheál Martin and the government. It was the Irish people and the Irish economy that we had to be watching. And sometimes you have to take hits and say nothing for the sake of a country. Not for you might be biling inside, but you have to look at the bigger picture. In the line of the tariffs, yeah, tariffs, we're going to be in the crossfire. Let's not, you know, Trump is going to put tariffs on Europe, and by association with Europe, we're part of that. I think what will happen down the road is this guy believes that it's everything is business. So it's going to be hit it, then let's have a big chat or a meeting and they'll start hammering over and back, and down the road you may be able to do a deal with them that may not affect businesses as much. But in the interim, businesses will be affected. But I know it in the Irish whiskey market. I've talked to a few people that have been involved in it, and they whiskey, like the whiskey at times is a different product. They look at different markets. I know that Japan at the moment, we are selling a lot of whiskey to Japan. So hopefully those people that are you know, making the whiskey and when tariffs, if he hits it hard, will be able to find other markets.
It's 800 million the value of the Irish whiskey exports to the US.
A billion, yeah.
I mean, and you won't
$1 billion.
You won't do that overnight.
You won't do
well.
That overnight.
You're,
yeah,
you're going to take.
There's
a
consequences, and that no one said there won't be, and it's going to be Trump hitting the tariffs on Europe. And we're going to be caught in it, and there's no point in saying we won't.
Christina, you wanted to come in there. I know when Michael was saying that Micheál Martin did exactly what he should have done and stayed as quiet as he could in the room. Do you not agree?
I'm kind of torn on it because I think what you're saying, the argument that he needs to protect Irish jobs, and Micheál Martin has said that was his number one priority going into that room. But at the same time, I can't help feeling that he did have somewhat of a hospital pass in terms of other Taoiseach that have had to go into that room with other US presidents, albeit that it's a very different game right now. The Trump presidency, some might say, isn't a normal presidency. But, you know, there was huge pressure on Leo Varadkar and Simon Harris last year to speak to Joe Biden about Palestine and Gaza and the Irish people's perspective on that. And there was a lot of criticism of them and their speeches throughout the St. Patrick's Day trip for perhaps not going as far. And if you look back at speeches that Varadkar did give at St. Patrick's Day, you know, they were a lot more hard-hitting. Even at the Ireland Funds dinner, there were speeches that referenced specifically, you know, children in Ukraine and children in Gaza and Palestine to an American, Irish-American business audience. And I feel, while Micheál Martin, I think, will have thought that this has gone as well as could have been expected, I think his game plan was to go in there and stay stum on a lot of things. I do think that there is that sort of uncomfortable feeling to sit with, that perhaps we didn't say some of the things that we would usually say to US presidents.
But in the past, you can say the difficult things and you can almost predict the response. With Donald Trump,
you cannot
predict the response. Isn't that the problem?
Yes, but he didn't have to do it in public in the Oval Office. He could have done it at the Ireland Funds dinner or on one of the doorsteps. And one of the previous Taoiseach made a speech about, I think, I'm not sure if it was Gaza or Ukraine, outside to the Irish. He spoke to the Irish journalists while in the US and deliver some of his messages. So Micheál Martin may have escaped some landmines in the Oval Office, but I do think he did a very cynical thing beforehand, which is they made this decision last week, the government did, to basically open the door to buying US fracked gas in the form of LNG. They rushed the decision before the Department of Energy had even finished its exploration of possibly cheaper options. And it was really clear from his conversations with Governor Abbott, who was saying, come and get our LNG, that this is basically a sense, well, I can't give in on Gaza or Ukraine, but I can give in on fossil fuels, even though our programme for government says we're going to reduce our use of fossil fuels. Micheál Martin made the decision he would sacrifice that in order to try to please Trump. I don't even think Trump will probably pay attention to it, but it puts us in the having to pay more money for fossil fuels we don't need.
And to be honest with you, I don't think Micheál stepped away from any of the hard issues. He actually opened the conversation by saying, I want to acknowledge, President, your peace initiatives.
His commitment to peace in Gaza.
No, but hold on. He opened the conversation there in relation to finding peace, and he brought it back to the Irish story. It doesn't happen, but it starts by the dialogue piece. And once the guns are silenced, that was the one word that rung out to me, that Micheál spoke about the guns being silenced, whether they're on Ukraine land or whether they're in Palestine. But he was on about the guns being silenced and the peace initiatives. I think that was a very, very
but
clear message.
But that's speaking to Trump's idea of himself wanting to be seen on the public stage as a peace broker. And you could tell that Micheál Martin was deeply uncomfortable. You know, you could see him sitting back in that chair, you know, trying to interject multiple times. Because if you know Micheál Martin, when he deals with, even with media, when things are said that he either disagrees with or he wants to sort of fact check, he likes to come in and have those stats. And I think a lot of the things that Trump was saying was uncomfortable for Micheál Martin. And it was interesting to see Trump say, you know, have a huge dislike for Europe. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. But then somehow feeling that Ireland is somehow
separate,
removed from that.
Yeah.
And in fairness to Micheál Martin, he didn't go in there as a spokesperson for Europe. I think he would have probably got hammered if he did something like that. So I think it was all about getting the balance right.
But at the end of the day, all Trump's looks at is trade deficits and exports and imports. And in my opinion, he'll be given out about Europe. And this is what I seem to see in this guy. He'll be given out. He'll still meet them. He'll still sit down with them. And he'll probably do a deal with them. And, you know, in fairness to Micheál Martin or anybody going out, he's one, Ireland is one part of it. But Trump just showed that he liked a bit of the Irish. But I think we might play ourselves up a bit too much, because we think that we're nearly the saviours of the world and the people that's going to decide everything. if you listen to Trump that day, I'd say he didn't even know who Sinn Féin were, but he's talked. Do you know what I mean? Or there was no reference.
So then on
to,
that, the fact
there
that
was no reference to. Yeah. Like, he seemed to be, there was names mentioned, and at times he was nearly looking as if he was a guy that was in another world. He doesn't seem to be au fait with what's going on in Ireland, even though we think, and the media think, that when we open our mouths here that Donald is listening to us
we were given the whole day in fairness to us. But I do take your point, and I just wonder on that, Michael, is there any point in us saying to America we'll buy the LNG if we don't matter?
If you're a business person, and if Donald Trump claims he's a business person, if you need gas, you buy it in the cheapest place, not through a nod and a wink and saying, geez, I like you. That's not the reason you buy something. If you're buying a car in the morning, you'll go around and price a few places and buy it where it's the cheapest, mm-hmm. not because you like the look of a garage.
But not just Ireland, across Europe, and this is being reported by the business press, it looks like Europe is building up to buy the gas, even if they don't need it, just to try to please Trump. And that's madness, given how damaging the gas is. It was, and even on Gaza, it didn't seem like he knew what the Occupied Territories Bill was.
No.
And yet we're tying ourselves in knots about not passing it because we're afraid of offending him.
I wondered about that because he was asked about Andrew Tate about a week or so ago when Andrew Tate had left Romania and went to Florida, and he said he didn't know him either.
I mean, sometimes he says, I've never heard of Project 2025. But in this case, he seemed to be, I wasn't sure whether it was genuine, he wasn't sure what it was, or whether he was just playing a game.
I just wonder with the LNG, are we playing a silly game and where we're sort of panicking? You know, we're saying, we'll do this thing and maybe he might be nice to us as a result, when really it's probably pointless.
Well, I suppose, to be honest with you, the LNG piece, that we always have to be looking for energy and ensuring that we have stable energy reserves. So to be honest with you, maybe that was one of the trains of thought, that we need to have a reserve of LNG, then there will be a need in order to stabilise our energy. And as Michael says, we need to buy it, and we get criticised if we don't do what is actually prudent in relation to where you're purchasing from to get the best possible price.
Just to be clear, we have all the gas we need coming across the pipelines from Scotland.
Well,
so the reserve...
You see what happened, the pipeline, when Russia...
I agree.
And
unlike some, we accept that we might need... An energy reserve. But the point is, it doesn't have to be LNG. And in the middle of, they asked GNI, Gas Network Ireland, to go away and look at this last year. And they came back and said, actually, it'll take longer than we thought. It'll cost more than we thought. It'll have to be refilled. That would take even more years. It would have to be filled six times a year and transpired. The growth of interconnection for electricity to England and to France, battery storage, solar, using Money Point as an oil-based backup. Actually, there are cheaper alternatives to LNG as a backup. And we're talking about spending €300 million to build the thing of customers' money and €60 million a year of customers' money to keep filling it when we may not even need it. And the government made this decision before we even got the research that the Department of Energy had commissioned to see whether it was necessary
The one thing I would say to you, and I'm not a spokesperson for the government, is that we saw a few weeks ago when the lights went out with the storm, right? Okay. And we saw 10 or 12 days. I will tell you one thing, I wouldn't like to be in government if I was the person, if something went wrong on the pipelines around this that's coming to us, and that we hadn't some backup for the people of Dublin or the people of the rest. The people of the West of Ireland went through a torrid time over the last few weeks. If you were out of gas and couldn't put on the light or couldn't
But Oisin is
cook,
saying you can have backup, but it doesn't have to be LNG.
What backup will come as quick?
Money Point's going to stop burning coal this year. It's going to go into a backup disposition, and it's going to be fired by oil when necessary. And it produces huge amounts of electricity. That'll be there. Interconnection will be there. Battery storage technology is improving
rapidly. Hold on.
And the LNG won't arrive for three to six years, and they rush the decision in 3 weeks.
Let's get clear on battery storage. I hear this coming out from you, from people, and talking about battery storage. If we needed the lights of the country put on, the battery storage wouldn't last 5 minutes with what we have at the moment.
But it's part of the measure. Don't talk about fantasy, talk about reality. Look how quickly solar technology has changed because of the investment in China.
But it will take time. And we need a stopgap in the meantime.
The LNG isn't a stopgap. It'll take 3 to 6 years.
It's part of our suite of measures to ensure we're energy secure. That's what the LNG is.
And by the way,
part of a suite of measures. And if you're turning on the batteries then have to be re-plugged. And we've seen that in January, we had the lowest amount of sunshine ever going, so the solar didn't really exactly work. The wind mightn't blow on the same day. So you really do need
that's
to...
Where, that's
so
where interconnection
days,
comes in
so
and battery storage.
That within 3 days, if you don't have the wind moving, the sun on, the batteries drain fairly quickly. So you do need to have alternative mechanisms that can actually connect in because if Dublin was without their energy, like what we had to suffer in the West of Ireland, I'm telling you.
But this is for a situation where somebody flies.
What I'm saying is, we needed probably to back up, but I'm not saying we buy it from Donald. I'm saying we buy it at the cheapest place, and whoever can produce
it. But does nobody think
the
there's a bang of panic coming from Ireland and Europe, be it on LNG or anything else to do with Trump? And like the question needs to be asked, like, you know, how far are we going to go to appease Trump, you know, to put off any sort of retaliatory action? You know, how much are we going to panic on these things?
So
how
if we far? Start with overpaying for LNG, where do you go from there? Anne.
Well, I think that, to be honest with you, it's not just all about the LNG and how do we appease Trump and everything else. I think when Micheál was speaking the other day, when he talked about Dunbeg and talking about Councillor Rita McInerney, there is a very good relationship and his fondness of Ireland. I actually think that if Ireland were in the leading position of negotiation with their diplomacy, we possibly could actually haggle out a better deal than the 200% traverse.
All we're saying is follow the evidence and follow the money before we make any rush decisions. And actually, this week, the communities in Pennsylvania, where they're doing the fracking that for the LNG that would come here, have asked Micheál Martin or Simon Harris, will you come and see what it looks like to be in a you know, we ban fracking here because of the impact on communities. And we're now saying, let's buy it from the US. The communities there have asked, written to say, come and see, or send the ambassador if you can't come this week, see what it's like on the ground before you do.
Cher and Mark Ruffalo, the actor, have also been speaking out about the fracking and appealing to former Taoiseachs of the past to take a look at it. So I wouldn't think it's the end of it. For
it's just, I suppose it's interesting. We have a government representative and opposition representative here, Oisin, and they're in agreement and they don't agree with you.
Well,
we're in a very new place, though, aren't we?
At the end of the day, the government representative and the opposition representative have people to answer back to in every constituency in this country. And we cannot afford, in my opinion, we have to make sure that the lights do not go out or that people will be left cold in their houses, in my opinion. And we have to act responsible. Look at every option. I have no problem in looking at every option, but my God, we cannot see what happened. I saw where we were 10 or 11 or 12 days without electricity and power.
And I know that.
I'm not just using that as...
But you're poor.
What I am saying is we cannot, as a country, between the economic side of it and with people living in it, we cannot take a risk that we haven't basically foolproof backups that we will not leave our people high and dry.
Everyone wants to solve that problem. Yeah. It's how you solve it. And you've already said yourself, don't be overpaying Donald Trump
I'd go for the cheapest place. And if I can buy it in Saudi Arabia cheaper, that's the way I do it.
Right. Well, that's another argument. But I mean, but also, is it completely pointless to do a deal on LNG? I mean, you've just said there, Anne, maybe if we were out on our own here doing bilateral negotiations with Donald Trump, we could do very well. We're not in that position. We're going to be caught in the crosshairs here. And as I said to you at the beginning, it's the EU that he has in his sights.
Yes, that was very clear. He had the EU on his sights. And we are very much part of that EU piece. And we are looking forward to the presidency coming next year. But at the same time, I do think we have a very strong hand within the EU to assist in that diplomacy negotiation of tariffs. It cannot be, I do think, as he is a businessman, there will be a give and take on both sides.
But I mean, we saw what the EU strategy is. It's come back at him with tariffs. And, you know, there are those who think that is not really the right strategy here with Donald Trump.
Well, it's a bit Trumpish. They're threatening tariffs and looking for talks. That's quite Trumpian in a way.
Negotiate. But you can say, well, let's talk about this. That's the other option. And not retaliate with your €26 billion worth of tariffs that will affect.
But they're not enforced. They're threatened. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the way that Trump does it with Mexico and Canada. Now, how he'll respond to people acting like he acts, that's...
It was great to see Michael McGrath as well as our commissioner out across America meeting with other statespeople and building those relationships as well, which is a connection at a very high level back into Europe.
Okay, let's move on because we were talking about the nitrates derogation here on the programme as well during the week. We have the latest report from the Environmental Protection Agency. There's been no overall improvements in Ireland's water quality, but we are still going back and fighting to retain the nitrates derogation. Now, should we extend it, Michael? How important is it?
Well, I'll put it this way to you. Ireland is looking at putting in 500,000 hectares of forestry, right? Or between now and 2050. We know GAIAC 2, and you've covered it yourself in the Nature Restoration Law, is limiting land use. And we have to make sure that we make maximum potential of the land that's capable of producing food, to be quite frank about it. And what will happen, and this is the reality, we are going to have a knock-on consequence, be it on the tillage sector, be it on the sheep sector, or be it on the beef sector, if the derogation doesn't come to fruition, for the simple reason there ain't more land, there's actually less. There's going to be a bigger fight for this land. Mm-hmm. And we have got to make sure, and I'm talking about doing things right. If you look at what Chagg has done, and I think it's worth anyone's while, down in Cork, the when they worked with farmers in a community, the results that came out of that. You don't just flick a switch today or tomorrow and say that you're going to resolve water quality overnight.
We've had 20 years or more.
Sorry, I'm talking about in the last few years and the reports that has been done and the different measures that has been made. You don't just change that overnight. Second of all, there is a big question in the west of Ireland over the phosphorus side of it, because phosphorus, in my opinion, an awful lot of this has been caused by
untreated agriculture.
Yeah, but the first thing that's done, you see a picture of a cow on the paper because the love hitting the farmer. In the line of the west of Ireland, there is a massive amount of towns that hasn't an upgrade sewage treatment plant, and it is causing problems, but unfortunately it's now in the red zone because of that water quality report. We need to get down technical and know, is it from that, from a town that hasn't an upgrade done and proper sewerage, or what is it from?
Oisin.
So absolutely, we need to invest in urban water, wastewater treatment, and that's a real issue, absolutely. But the evidence from the EPA and from Chagg is very clear. On the EPA side, there's 1,000 water bodies around Ireland that are being affected by agricultural pollution. There's 200 that are being affected by urban wastewater pollution. So it's five times more water bodies being affected by agriculture. And the Chagas modelling shows that cattle urine is 60% of the problem for nitrogen, fertilizer 30%, and slurry
8%. Ironically enough, if you look at the nitrates derogation, it's both nitrogen and phosphorus. If you look at the west of Ireland, what can you do? You cannot, because of phosphorus, farm to the potential that you would be required to or want to because of the phosphorus situation.
The EPA data is very clear that agriculture is the biggest pressure on water quality.
Because what's their method? Have a look at it. Tell me, because I actually got it in the west of Ireland what it is. What they do is, they look, if there's a town in an area, they look at the number of people that's in it. Second of all, they ask the Department of Agriculture the number of cattle in an area. So how can we just decide that we're going to have a method or a system that's going to say, because there's more cattle, if 1,000 kids come into the town, okay, or 1,000 people, what happens?
Oisin, can I just ask, just so we're clear on your position, you're saying that we shouldn't be going in and asking again to hold on to the nitrates derogation. Is that the bottom line?
Well, my position is, I think the government is kind of either deluded about how this works or is misleading the farmers, because it isn't, no matter how well we advocate, that's not how it works. The previous agriculture commissioner, he was here, I think last year, said the only thing the commission can pay attention to when it comes to making this decision about whether the derogation can be extended is the science. So the government's focus needs to be on what we can do to improve water quality, not how we can champion Irish agriculture. And they're not doing enough. We probably need like different geographic stocking densities. Like there's areas where you can, where it's fine and the water quality is fine, and areas where there needs to be less cows in the fields if we're going to have the water quality improve. And the government doesn't want to grasp that nettle.
Well, in fairness, if you look at the new proposals, they're looking in areas where you have cows grazing in paddocks, that the paddock size will change dramatically. That's one of the proposals, I understand, at the moment, to make sure the water quality would be better.
But time is running out because this decision is due to be made next, within a year.
Well, our time has run out as well. And we're almost at the end of the programme. Well, we practically are. I want to thank you all for coming in. Thank you very much for listening at home. I hope you have a lovely weekend, St. Patrick's weekend that it is. Don't forget, if you've missed anything, you can listen back on the RT Radio app.